This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast.
This will be intro to After Action Report take two. Take one was a very, very sleep deprived on a very late Sunday evening after a weekend of going hard. And we decided let's flush that intro and actually make it a lot more exciting to us.
We sat down with Roger Taft and Josh Egebean for the second time. We got to catch up with them Labor Day weekend of last year when they were going to launch their Kickstarter for the After Action Report, their comic book guide, where they detail not the obvious, there's 155 issues in the original Marvel run. Instead, they're documenting all of the cover variations, print variations of that, of the digest, of the etc. The Kickstarter funded pretty easily, and we should have them in hand soon. And so we sat down and talked to them about volume 2, volume 3, 4, 5, 6.
It's always a pleasure for me to sit in on these conversations. You are a comic guy, like through and through. The joke intro I just did about being exhausted or whatever, like, you know, you sat down and it was the same thing because we had been going so hard.
I was wrecked.
But it's funny because 15, 16 seconds into the conversation, that first time that like truly only comic guy nugget of information drops, like all three of you guys just like shot right to life. And it was like 10:30 p.m. on Sunday. It was brutal. I was ready for bed. I didn't go to bed till 3:30.
That's true.
Like a lot of things, they hit a delay, but they did what I like, which is instead of rushing to push something out with an error or with a mistake, they said, hold up, let's fix this. Because, you know, if you deliver round one and it ain't the way you promised, there might not be a round two.
I was having some anxiety in the beginning of the conversation because we truly were in a tucked away hidden lobby, but it was still a lobby. Several people walked through. But after that first time, I had to let that go and just be like, you know what? I'm going to edit.
And I mean, not to mention there was like a radio playing.
Yes.
The hotel was playing music. You know, all jokes aside, it is like being a fly on the wall in the lobby at the after hours of a show, because I heard bits of this conversation Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night at various points where these guys were just sitting with their friends in the lobby.
BSing.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I'm all in whenever Volume 2 launches. You know, like I've said before, and I'll say it again, I'm never going to hunt down 150 loose comics. I'm not going to hunt down variations of 150 loose comics. Having a book that has all of the covers that I can physically flip through. Or, you know, I'm more excited to flip through, find a cover, and ask you about the issue, and if the issue matches the cover, or if it's just a sick piece of artwork for the cover and it's got nothing to do with the story.
We ended that conversation with, hey, let's get back to the bulk of our friends in the main lobbies, which would have been way too loud to do this. We had to find that offshoot lobby. But before we ever sat down with anybody else, we bypassed everyone. Fingers in the air, deuces, we'll be back, hit the elevator, and had this incredible private viewing of, honestly, some stuff I've never seen before.
I mean, this was the wackiest, weirdest shit I have ever seen pertaining to G.I. Joe, period.
A was with us. He got to flip through Chinese G.I. Joe comics. I don't even know all the different languages and cultures and countries that they just scattered on the bed and were like, here you go, boys. And it was what we had seen in the D-class booth, but we got to flip through them and read them and see Snake Eyes Die, it floored me.
Yeah, I don't remember what country that was from, but that was actually the one I was going to bring up because it was like, there's the one panel that has like flesh tone Destro.
Oh, yes.
And then Quinn is like a whole different guy. Snake Eyes dies, you know, like you can't read any of the bubbles unless you're bilingual or multilingual at that point. But like, it's really this. I'm stuttering because it was, I should have never had the opportunity to thumb through these.
Yeah, they gave us a gift in allowing us to flip through those. And it's also just a great reminder that no matter how much you have, somebody always has a little more. And this is why, like, you and I never try to talk from a position of authority. Our collections are what they are. We know a shit ton. There are people that know more than us. We talked about it in our Joe Fist episode. You know, we got to see a two-up, not in the glass, but in hand. We got to see these comic books that I didn't even know those countries put out comics. We've got to see and talk to so many people that floor us with their knowledge. Roger and Josh, in our interview, talked about people that were schooling them, and they're the comic book guys making the comic book book. I truly appreciate Roger and Josh's time and the love that they've shown us. Sitting down with us in September of last year, sitting down with us again, you know, like they gave us a beautiful gift.
No, because, you know, obviously we had talked behind the scenes. I mean, specifically you had talked behind the scenes being like, hey, we're both going to be at Joe Fest. We'd love to sit down. And they made it a point. Hey, let's make that happen. Let's make that happen.
It's a gift of friendship. It's a gift of knowledge. It's a gift of confidence. And, you know, I truly appreciate them and I love their project.
It is a true delight, you know, because I don't say a single word. I didn't even have a microphone. You know, I had a great time just sitting there listening, even though I could have honestly just grabbed A and just hit the lobby because, you know, I didn't need to be there. And it's like, there's also a treat with these episodes where I get to hear them. It's a great conversation. To me, it is definitely like, screenshot's not the right word because we're talking about an audio format here, but like, it's an audio bite of sitting in the lobby without the extreme chaos of 100 guys talking at the same time.
That is true. Well, let's jump into the episode because I'm excited to let them talk about their project. After Action Report funded on Kickstarter easily, you guys funded before the sweat, right? Or
3-4 days before it ended, but we were very consistent the whole time compared to high at the beginning, dead in the middle, and high at the end.
And since kickstarting, you guys have put out several updates, and it seemed really positive and really smooth all the way up until kind of this last edit where there's a small delay. The books, instead of being here at Joe Fest, are shipping within a couple weeks, right?
It did start out as a small delay and got closer to Joe Fest and got closer to Joe Fest and started to be a bigger delay. And now we're hoping the book is actually printed, actually probably on pallets by now.
Somewhere in that printed in box, certainly not on a boat yet. This is Sunday of Joe Fest.
You guys are new authors, so these are new author
growing pains.
Yeah. A little bit of their problem, a little bit of your problem, a little bit of world problem, but things are done.
I think that our problem part was simply not knowing what they were going to do. You know, we didn't know how they were going to print it, and that's where most of the problems came from.
In the span of Joe Fest 2020, which was September, we sat down. We were crazy excited to hear about this. You guys were handing out ash cans. From that point to the Kickstarter to the end to now, which is 9 months later, from my perspective, it's nothing but good news except for this one sort of delay at the end. I know you guys have pivoted several times. You've had to make changes and try different things, but I don't think there's been any like...
Yeah, it's been a fairly straightforward process. It's mostly time-consuming more than anything.
Yeah, so essentially, my perspective's not wrong. Like, this is a crazy positive experience for new authors, which is highly unusual.
True, true. I think part of it was just that I've been dwelling on it for so long that I had a pretty good idea of what would be happening throughout it.
Those of us that have kickstarted that I've talked to, no one's really sussed about any delays. You guys have been upfront about everything. And
the experience is positive and you guys continue to hand out these little teasers. Every time I see you, I get something in my hand that just wets the whistle just a little bit. Honestly, the problem with everything you've handed me is I'm now going to have to pull all my long boxes out and get to work.
That's the idea.
The rabbit hole is now open. So I just want to do kind of a summary. So like we said, with last time we talked here, we were at the very beginning of the Kickstarter, literally within days. And our Kickstarter had a very different pattern than when you look at a lot of other ones. Like we had no big end. We had no big front end. We were like up and down, all the way through. Almost every day we had people supporting us on Kickstarter, backers, 2-3 backers a day. Our final was right around 12,000, and we had asked for 7. So we definitely passed it. We hit 3 stretch goals, which included...
No, we hit every stretch goal. Right. I was adding them right up to the last minute. The last one was reached in the last, 4 hours.
Which included poster prints, ash cans, and, right? 2 poster. Oh, and the checklist printed.
All the fancy things you've handed me this weekend.
Correct. Yes. All that we got done relatively quite a few months ago. We had the prints and everything ready. All through the fall, Roger and I pretty much every day, all day, we're on Facebook back and forth and, doing Dropbox. Hey, here's a page. Look at this, And because I think we had 2 authors, it actually helped a lot because our book is 144 pages. So that's a pretty long book, right? I'd say around January, February, March, the book was probably around 80%. And then it became fine tuning. And that's, of course, something as rookie bookmakers, we realize actually takes a lot longer. Like we built the book and we put all these facts and cool stuff in there and got all the scans and all that stuff. And that was actually, time consuming, but much easier. And then when we started getting into the fine points, it was like, oh my God, here. And then we had articles and then we did interviews. Roger did interviews and you can talk about that.
Yeah, the interviews we did on Zoom meetings with Larry Hama, Rick Parker, and Rod Wiggum. Each one of them was 1.5 to 2 hours long. And we used a talk-to-text program to not have to translate it ourselves. But that still ended up... They were an average of about 50 pages each, and we only needed space for about 3 pages each. So that was a lot of editing. So that was a lot of editing that we had to cut the chaff out.
Oh, yeah.
What was the important parts that we actually wanted out of the interview? Most of it was interesting stuff. There were bits about Stan Lee. There were bits about comic publishing and how the industry works now versus then. But we had to decide what was important for the book and what was interesting and what was new.
Yeah, where you start to look at, this is a story that Larry has told 1,000 times. Is it necessary for this book versus can it be cut because we all know it?
Exactly. So I tried to steer the questions away from the standard questions. Specifically, I didn't want to ask him about 21, but I personally had a specific question, and it still led to the regular...
Sure.
Spiel about 21.
You still end up with he walks down the aisle and he's the last door. And
exactly. Even though it really had little to do with the question, but right. It still led to that because that's the train of thought.
Of course. That's how he's trained to answer things after 40 years of answering Joe nerds.
Yeah.
So this is an example of how when you're writing a book, you find things. So I bought all the Marvel ages, right? From 1 till 140. And G.I. Joe, there's tons of stories in the Marvel Age comics, right? And they're all pre-stories. But in Marvel Age, we found pictures of Marvel, the Marvel offices, right? They animated them. So the Marvel bullpen. And so the hallway, this famous hallway, is in the book now. We put those in there and we drew a line from where Jim Shooter walked down to Larry Hama's office. And you can see that his office is basically the last public office. There's a couple offices that are like for supplies or something like
sure.
that. Right. And of course, I'm sure to a certain degree, the whole metaphor of walking down the hall, him and, it's probably true and it is true. But ultimately, it's a little bit more exaggerated 40 years now.
He's a writer.
Yeah, exactly. And that was we discovered that in Marvel Age. We're like, oh my God, here's the bullpen. Here's the walkway. Let's put that in there. And so we drew a line. We literally drew a line.
That's incredible.
Walk down the hallway. So that's kind of stuff that we discovered through, especially Marvel Age series, which has covered the entire time that G.I. Joe was published. So there's in every single Marvel age, there's stuff about G.I. Joe. And when we discovered that, it was like, that's filled up fun facts. Like, we had, like, top 10 lists. We had all kinds of new information. And that kind of came in the 2021.
That's an interesting bit because a lot of comic book Joe collectors collect four Marvel Age issues because those are the covers or there's a specific story. But the fact that all of the Marvel Ages had at least something.
Yeah, the Marvel Age started like 3 months after G.I. Joe and ended just a few months before G.I. Joe. So literally every issue has at least the release date information, if nothing else. And they still have interviews with Larry about his new project on this, or Jim Shooter talks about something, or they have some new contract with Hasbro or something like that.
Transformers crossover, G2, you know?
So even if it's peripheral, it's still something that a G.I. Joe fan would be interested in.
I've got to stop being your guys' friend. Like,
I mean, it really helped a lot. I mean, there was a tremendous amount of information there. And honestly, it's for everything Marvel. Like, I was looking the other day, like, I think a lot of people know, like, the Darkhawk, like, the fans made this obscure Marvel character, like, a hot-selling book, but, like, his first appearance is in Marvel Age, so that Marvel Age is, like, a $100 comic book because
oh, wow.
Darkhawk is in it. You know, that's the kind of stuff.
And Darkhawk's not even really relevant anymore.
Right. But it was, like, 2 or 3 months before his series appeared, like, yeah. You know? And so Marvel Age is filled with that stuff, and it was like, you know, we had, there's like Joe art that, what it's like, pre-work, but not colored, I mean, it's...
Well, it's colored, but it's colored differently. Like, the whole ninja battle, as it happens, 21 again, the whole ninja battle with the three red ninjas, they're not red in the previews.
Oh, wow, what color are they?
They're kind of like a gray,
white. Yeah, I think
white,
they were gray.
Somewhere in there, it's like a... Light red. I don't think they're not. It's definitely like not red. Red. It's just one panel.
Sure. But it's kind of like a storm shadow light. So they're a little gray instead
of
full on
exactly.
Bright white.
They, I'd have to double check it, but it is just, it's a weird scene in a different color palette.
That's so. All right. I'm going to have to find this.
At a certain point with Marvel Age, there was just way too much G.I. stuff. So we started listing it. And it first of all, then Marvel Age was my nemesis page, the first page I built.
He really did screw it up.
Not the first page of the whole book, but I screwed it up and just couldn't get it right, you know, logistically. And this kind of leads into our learning curve of, like, learning a program to make a book, right? That was a big part of the beginning. Like, after we got the Kickstarter funded, we're like, great. And then we're like, oh, crap, I don't know about this book. Like, how does this program work? How do I do this? That? So, and Roger, who is very much the designer of the book, you know, I'm just kind of the cut and paste grunt work guy who just, like, has got to get all this done. And he designed it. And so he designed the pages, and then I started inputting stuff. We bounced back and forth like that for a minute. But all of a sudden, we were like, okay, now we're at a point where, like, the book is done. What else do we put? And we were, like, about 10 pages short. And we're kind of like, all right, now what do we put in it? You know, and then I'd say the beginning of 2021 was very much that, like, kind of sorting out, getting the fine-tuned stuff. Roger lives in Florida. So I flew out to kind of help finish the book right together as a team, because that's what we are. It turned out to be 4 weeks. Now, luckily, I have a life and a job where I can just take off and be like, I'm gone and done. And it just was like a grind. We pulled it off and got it done. Basically, the beginning of April was when the book was pretty much completely finished to our satisfaction and the deadline that the publisher had given us to get it here by Joe Fest.
Kind of a self-imposed deadline for trying to get it here today, this weekend.
Sure, but it's a good deadline.
It wasn't so much that they said, hey, you have to have it done today. It was, we needed it here, so we worked backwards to get that deadline. That last month, when he arrived, it seemed to be like, oh, we've only got a week's worth of work to do. No, it was a solid month of work to do. We were working like 10 to 12 hours a day on average.
Oh, wow.
We actually were... Toylanta, we went to Toylanta, and that's where we had the preview, because we'd put that together to give something else. And so that was like the beginning of the 4 weeks. And then we kind of did this whole, like, where Roger kind of worked during the day, and I'm a night owl, so I'd be like, I'll sleep in, and then I'll work all night, and he'd give me a list of things to do, because, you know, he's designing, and I'm cutting and pasting, and, you know, and then we had to deal with the interviews, as we just discussed, the struggle of trying to condense it, and then physically fit it onto the page, which was very difficult and took a lot of tricks. And also ended up being like, you know, a symptom of what happened later.
Were you guys living together for 4 weeks and trying to birth this baby?
I have a store in Florida, and there was space within the store building that he was able to stay in.
Still, that you guys were practically on top of each other for 4 weeks and trying to birth this mental and research child.
And we certainly didn't plan for 4 weeks. I mean, we literally thought it was going to be a week, week and a half, maybe 2 weeks at the most. New thing that we found after new thing that we found. And a lot of it was little adjustments that, like, the page tabs would be off and we'd have to move those in. And 144 pages, so that's a lot of page tabs to.
So, like, he'd be like, I'm done and tired of, all right, my turn.
Tag in, tag out.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
This explains why you guys' Kickstarter updates were always, like, on time and really dense. I would always kind of skim first because I didn't want... There's certain information I never want to know. I want the product in hand.
Yeah.
But then we would talk online, and when you guys were asking for help from your community of things, and then I would read your updates, and it always seemed like everything was going smooth. So 4 weeks of the two of you having to swing shift 10, 12 hours a day, that's nuts.
Yeah, it really was. And it looked like we were almost there. I mean, it looked like it's only 10% of the book.
It's the Pareto principle.
Yeah.
80% super simple, 20% is 80% of the work.
Yeah. And then that literally is how it worked out. It was mostly a matter of organizing what's left and catching the mistakes, you know, because, this icon is in the wrong place. This book is actually in the wrong spot, you know. So we had to just catch all those mental errors it's like when you're editing your own words, you fill in what you think is there. We had to break through that and do it with pictures and figure, that picture doesn't belong there. Or that other one is supposed to be there, or whatever it was.
This is still, like, all of the research you guys put in, this is just volume one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys got this to the finish line so that you could do the same amount of work 5 or 6 more times.
Absolutely.
So you're masochists. That's incredible.
Well, one thing to our benefit is Marvel is probably the most complicated because it didn't advertise the fact that there were variations. IDW tells you straight out, right, first page or last page, whatever issue it happens to be, these are all the variations on the covers. You know, we have these exclusives and we have these reprints and these incentives. So you'd got 90% of the work right there.
Sure.
Marvel, we had a lot of knowledge, but that didn't mean we had solid information. We couldn't be certain that there was no reprint of number 93. Not that there is a reprint of 93, but we had to kind of prove that there was.
Right. You guys had the physical data to sort through.
Yes.
Right.
And you guys had the historical and anecdotal knowledge, but then you had to go through and do the scientific checks and balances to make sure that you're not bullshitting yourselves or us.
Oh, absolutely. And there were several instances where it was like, I hate to harp on 21, but...
Sure. But 21 is a weird issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the anecdotal knowledge that everybody goes, oh yeah, that's the truth. Everybody thinks Larry Hama did at least the layout sketch for 21's cover.
Right.
Well, there's really no evidence that he did.
Oh.
And
that's
so...
That's anecdotally been fact, I guess, for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, absolutely. And we couldn't find any evidence that he was actually credited for the cover.
Oh.
I didn't catch it until... I didn't catch it at all until one of our friends, Tim Finn, who's pretty heavy into the cover art and specifically the artists in general.
Yeah, and his website is... A Real American Book or something?
Yes, I believe.
And he's on Talking Joe's like every week.
Yes. He tapped in near the end while we were getting down to the 0 hour. And he asked if he could help in any way. And he offered to double check our credits for the covers. And he's like, Larry Hammond didn't do the cover for 21. It was just...
Absolutely.
So some of the credits on covers are not there. Or if there is a signature there, you have to identify whose it is, and that can't be easy all the time. But the assumption was that Larry did the layouts on cover of 21. Tim was like, absolutely not. He didn't touch 21.
So who does Tim...
Klaus Johnson is credited with the cover. I mean, he signed it. I think there was an inker in addition to Klaus Johnson.
Klaus is next level anyway, so...
Yeah, absolutely, so... And we've always known that Klaus Johnson was the cover artist.
Right.
But everybody kind of made the assumption that that Larry did the preliminary drawing, which he did for a lot of both G.I. Joe and other Marvel comics.
He just knew he didn't have to for Klaus.
Yeah, that's probably the case right there. But anyway, it's just assumptions like that that we naturally thought that, well, that's what it is. So we always had to find ways to double check ourselves and get around that.
This is why you guys applied the scientific method to a nerd endeavors.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point, is like to always trying to validate.
And that's where like the Marvel Age really came in a lot, because sometimes we could look in there and be like, okay, this is correct, and sometimes there. But also, to a certain degree, there's just not this information around anymore.
I can continue to fan on the scientific method that you guys are employing, and we can continue to go down this minutia because I have a lot of questions.
We have hours of answers.
Yes. About like Action Force Transformers and the Hulk stuff, because I didn't know about the Hulk stuff until it was in your book, and then I'm hitting you up privately, I'm asking you questions about this, and at Toylana, someone was like, that's not a thing, and I drug them all the way over to talk to you guys.
Guess what? It's a thing.
It's a thing.
Or at least a Hulk.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Yes, it is, and here's how we know, you know? So I can keep going, but ultimately, like, this was supposed to be in our hands today.
Yep.
I was supposed to go home with this and save you guys shipping cost.
Yeah.
For the Kickstarter people, but...
The Kickstarter people, sure.
And then just to sell to people in general who don't know about it yet.
Because of this one small production delay, and I say small in terms of it was a small issue and it caused a delay. What does the delay look like? Is it 2 days? Is it 2 years?
I would say the delay in those terms was 2 months.
Okay. That's not bad.
We're thinking roughly 6 weeks shipping.
Sure.
Because it's slow boat. We finished it almost 3 months ago now.
Yeah, beginning of April.
Yeah.
I remember when you guys finished it because we were talking about things.
Yeah, we posted a little Facebook video of us hitting the send button and all that kind of fun stuff.
You know, 2 months is always an estimate if it's coming from overseas. But 2 months is, that's not that bad of a delay.
No. No.
We've had video games and toys and comic book Kickstarters delayed years.
Yes.
So a 2 month approximate delay, that's nothing.
When I approached Josh about this, I literally said, do you want to do a G.I. Joe project that'll take at least a year?
And here we are.
Here we are.
At least a year.
So here we go. And we're actually under a year because it's really, really, we didn't do that much before the Kickstarter. We did a little bit. It was preliminary designs and stuff like that, but we didn't actually start the book until the Kickstarter, and that was 9 months ago.
The benefit of being at Joe Fest, I've got to put my hands on the book that needs a tweak.
Yes.
Maybe it's just my opinion. I assume others were going to share this opinion, is I would rather have a small delay and have it right.
Yes.
Than have it on time and have it...
Kind of not so right.
Yeah. Have it 95% right.
Yeah.
You guys really, I mean, it's a 5% thing.
Yeah.
But you guys are ballsy enough to take that hit and do that 5%. So we have a 2 month delay, approximate.
We're guessing August would be the books will be in our hands to be able to then put it in a box to mail it to everybody on Kickstarter. And for the people who buy it on our website, which is afteractionreport.net, once we have the book in hand, it's no longer a pre-order. So that's kind of where we're at right now. Like, you know, we finished the book. We're waiting for it to be shipped and printed, and or it's printing now somewhere. This is Sunday at the end of Joe Fest. And then we wait. We just wait for it to get here. We can track it on a boat. I can't wait to see that and follow the boat, where the boat goes. And then it arrives, and then we basically put it in boxes, and like I said, just said, just ship it. And then everybody will get it in their hands, and then whatever convention from now on we go to, we'll be able to sell it at a table.
That's going to be fantastic.
We can hand it right to you.
Yeah.
To me, this is more exciting than when you're going to ship it to me, because to be frank, when you ship it to me means now I have to do the work.
Yeah, now it's in your hands.
Yes, to go through all of my long boxes. And I have a list and I know that I'm like 90% done. But then you went, but are you 90% done with variations? And I went, I'm not doing that. And you went, but are you 90% done with Marvel Age and Hulk? And I'm screwed.
Action Force, coloring books, you know. We started throwing in all kinds of things when we found little spaces. So there's even more in there now.
I'm crazy excited about it, but I know like it's going to cost my wallet time and effort. My wallet's going to bleed because of you guys. Thanks.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
My point was the thing I'm most excited about is that you budgeted your Kickstarter and you budgeted your time and website so that after you deliver the Kickstarter, you're still able to deliver to others who missed the Kickstarter. And that's exciting. I mean, personally to me, because it means that you guys are looking at this not as a hobby project, but as an actual thing that will continue to live and grow with you guys.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
First, how do I buy this if I miss the Kickstarter outside of a convention?
There's only one place. It's our website. It's afteractionreport.net.
.net, not .com.
.net. And you just go to the store, and there's only about four options. You can buy a couple prints. You can buy the book. Right now, it's pre-order. As soon as we get it in hand, it'll be no longer pre-order. Right? There's a couple prints and a poster.
I think we've got the two mini prints, the poster, the large print. Really, the poster and the print are the same thing, except on better paper with a white border to include a little bit more of the image.
And those are of the cover.
By Rod Wiggum.
By Rod Wiggum. And
even if you aren't a comic book connoisseur or you don't want to deep dive into variations, it's one, it's a Joe reference guide, and we need more of those. And then two, Rod Wiggum.
He also did the back cover, too, so original art on both sides.
He did the drawing for the back cover, and then Tom Feaster did the coloring.
Oh, nice. And Tom is fantastic.
Yes, yeah. Tom's a longtime friend of mine, so it was good to get him involved one way or another.
Even if you don't, and there's a lot of the community that doesn't, even if you don't like the Devil's Due run of G.I. Joe, everybody loves Tom's covers.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Tom is wonderful. And he's fun to talk to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually met him at a G.I. Joe event. I think it was a Toylanta, not knowing he was a cover artist at all. I had no clue. But we talked to Joe's. We got to be friends. And then the next show I went to, he was there selling prints. I was like, what are these? And he said, oh, these are the covers I did for Devil's Due. And I was, I didn't know you worked for Devil's Due.
So now he's not just done Devil's Due, but he's done After Action Report.
Absolutely. All the more important.
All the more important. I like Kickstarters, but so many Kickstarters are more focused on getting their product just out than continuing to get their product out. And you guys have thought about that, and I think that's awesome. This ends at 1994.
Six.
96.
96.
With Extreme, basically.
Okay, so issue 155, Extreme, coloring books, Marvel Age, the nines. But it doesn't go past that, which means there's going to be a volume two. Volume 2's Kickstarter is going to be this year, next year, 3 years from now?
It'll be in the fall of this year.
Excellent.
And like I said, this time, you know, instead of doing the Kickstarter, starting the book, because we didn't know if people would really be interested in this, right? So why would you start a book and then have a Kickstarter fail? Well, now we know that, like, there's a lot of interest, and obviously there's still a lot of love for Devil's Due. I mean, like, it's now
I loved it.
Pushing almost 20 years ago now. Or actually, it's 2021, so it is 20 years. You know, Real American Heroes, 40 years ago, 20 years ago. I mean, that's a long time. There's a whole lot of fans and everything like that. So this book will be from 2001 to 2008 and more. So we'll get to the and more in a moment. So that will cover, like, the Dreamwave. It'll cover the Hasbro comic packs, which a lot of people asked us about, right? So we decided to do it because the books are organized by publishing release, so that's why we'll put all those in there. You know, there are some original stories with that. You know, there's even a 21 and a half, I think, or 21B, I think. So there's a lot of original stories that Hasbro put out in that time period through the comic packs. And so those will be in there. Like I said, Dreamwave will be in there. And then all the different, you know, Devil's Due, like Transformers crossovers, which is four series. And then Reloaded will be in there. And, you know, that's going to be a fun one because that was the very first, I realized this the other day when I was doing this research, G.I. Joe Reloaded was like the first official non-real American hero continuity because when Devil's Due restarted in 2001, it picked up right after Hammer's stuff, right? Frontline was a Hammer story in the first, and so then it became the continuation of continuity. Now, when IDW took over, it became Disavowed, which is a whole other story. But ultimately, when G.I. Joe Reloaded came out, and it's like 13 episodes plus two one-shots, right? So it's not a whole lot of books. But that was the first time anybody had another continuity. This is one of the cool aspects of our book, is that we actually helped organize it by with a coloring system for continuity. So when you look at the book, right, like Real American Hero continuity is black, Action Force continuity is yellow, some of these other ones are gray and green. Roger, what's Devil's Due color going to be?
Devil's Due will be red.
Red.
And the reason for that is I wanted it for the three main publishers, Hasbro, Devil's Due, IDW. I wanted to do red, white, and blue. Can't do white because you can't print white. So Larry Hama's favorite color is black, but obviously the opposite of white. So it'll be negative white, red, blue. So the red for Devil's Due is taken directly from their logo. And then blue, obviously, will be for IDW.
So that's like the long series of that we've built into our volumes, right? So, and because just the nature of G.I. Joe right now is like there's all kinds of crazy continuities all over the place, right? I mean, they keep coming out with new ones all the time. Like 2001, that wasn't the case. Yeah, 2001, Devil's Due restarted, and it went all the way till the end of America's Elite. When Devil's Due ended, that ended that version of the continuity, and then the splits. Now, like Marvel and DC, they've done this stuff all over the place. You know what I mean? Like, it's insane. But G.I. Joe didn't have that until the end of Devil's Due. It was one continuity from 1982 to 2008. And then there's some side stuff and things like that that were for fun. But then once IDW came, so that's why we've just, you know, a year ago we were talking about continuities, and we're like, how do we sort this out? So the fans will be able to figure it out through the continuities, because it does get confusing, right? And, you know, unfortunately, they call the Devil's Due era disavowed now. And that was a Hasbro decision, you know? But, like, that's what IDW wanted when they started with 155 and a half. So that's why we're focusing just with the Devil's Due era, 2001, 2008.
Devil's Due 100% had its problems and wasn't Hama great. But if we're collecting Blackthorn, certainly Devil's Due is amazing.
Yes.
I loved Devil's Due for most of the run. Problems or not. I know there are people that don't like it, but I liked Blackthorn, and Blackthorn was awful.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Very much
yeah,
so.
Yeah, 3Ds. Very blurry.
Yeah. Well, A has read the 3D. I've read the 3D. They're not great.
Not by any stretch of the imagination.
There's, what, five or six different versions of G.I. Joe versus Transformers, or G.I. Joe and Transformers. Not all of those are great either. Devil's Due, great or not, it deserves its time in the sun because it gave us Overweight Bazooka, and it picked up where nobody else would.
The other thing here is that, and Josh Blalock has gotten credit for this, not only did he bring G.I. Joe back as a comic book in 2001, he brought an entire generation of fans, which are his age too, back to collecting.
Yeah, right? He brought them forward.
Many of us had kind of faded away. We were working, we were in college, we were in our mid-20s. Especially if you're Generation X, right? And it's like, all of a sudden, here's G.I. Joe back again. And Hasbro was bringing toys back at the same time, right? I think the 25th anniversary wasn't too far behind what Josh did.
6 years.
Was it 6 years?
6 years. 2007. All right,
I'm not the toy guy, so let's let the toy guys talk about that. All right. But ultimately, and Josh also, not me, Josh, but Josh Blalock, brought 80s properties back to comics. I mean, like, Transformers came back at the same time as they were with Dreamwave and you know, Devil's Due. Well, technically, it was Image and Devil's Due had G.I. Joe right around 2001, 2002. They both started. You know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles even then kind of returned as a stronger property. It had faded a little bit and came back. Star Wars was out again. You know, Star Wars was in the theaters. You know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden everything was that time period. And you can give Josh Blalock a lot of credit for doing that in the comic industry, giving this kickstart, sorry, bad pun, to 80s properties. And so that's why we, you know, we're doing Devil's Due era, right? And that's the next volume, volume two.
You could almost say that he almost created a new genre, which would be like a nostalgia genre. It's a wave of G.I. Joe, Transformers, Star Wars, Voltron, He-Man. All those started coming back as comic properties after G.I. Joe started.
So with Volume 2, is he signed on to do some...
We have discussed with him.
Excellent. I would love to see that sort of discussion with him about... He brought G.I. Joe back because he was a G.I. Joe fan.
Yes. And that's a major difference between the first volume and the second volume. All the interviews we did were people that worked on G.I. Joe. It was their job. Now we're going to get into an era where the people we're talking with were just as much of a fan as we were.
Right. They were kids when the book came out, and now they're in the profession.
Yeah. Love it or hate it, they were trying to bring it forward.
Yeah. In fact, Josh is actually one of our Kickstarter backers before we ever talked to him about doing anything with Volume 2.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you, Josh Blaylock.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Like, I would love to hear from him. He tried to bring it forward. He tried to do something out of love and a passion. We've all done it. And I think he had more hits than misses, personally.
Yeah, I was very much enamored with Devil's Due. I loved it. Even when I didn't love it, I still loved it.
Yeah, same. Like, even when the comic shop was like, and I was like, listen, I'm going to need two copies. Like,
you know, just like we did with the first volume, we're going to have a bunch of interviews. And then, I mean, there's other, you know, like Brandon Jura and Robert Atkins. They got their start with G.I. Joe and Devil's Due. I mean, like.
And Atkins is still our man.
Yeah. And just today we got Robert Atkins on board. He's agreed to do an interview for us.
Excellent.
So all those, you know, who are still very, you know, very much industry people. And so they're going to be contributing with interviews and stuff like that, just like before. But like this time, I think the interviews will be different because, like you said, they're the passionate fans who turned it into a profession and then tried to do their best with creating what Hama did. You know, and then all of a sudden for IDW, we're going to go back to Hama. So it'll be a very interesting like flow between the three volumes because volume 3 is IDW's Real American Hero continuity with Larry, starting at 155 and a half. And probably by the time we get to that book, which would probably be kickstarted in 2022, released in 2023, will probably be by issue 300 now. So it would be 155. So almost exactly the same amount of books as the original Marvel run.
Which is incredible. And I can't tell you how excited I am by this. So we've just talked about volume 1. We've talked about volume 2. You've given us a teaser for volume 3, Josh. How many volumes do you have mapped out?
Five
are mapped out. All right, I'm gonna find a way to talk you into 11.
We'll just skip numbers 7 through 10.
That's one way to do it.
Yes.
I'm just gonna have to figure out how to do this. No, because I truly love what you guys are doing, and not just what you guys are doing, but you guys and your passion and your knowledge and honestly your friendliness. So thank you for doing this with us, and especially right now when we're still sitting in a hotel room or sitting in a hotel lobby with a big echo and people walking through who give two dams what we're doing.
After a show.
It is late on Sunday, though. So
all of our friends are at a bar going, "Where the hell are you?" And messaging all of us like, "Are you coming? You didn't go to bed early, right? We all leave tomorrow. Come on." So thank you for your time. If any way I can help.
You are.
Yeah.
We've talked a bunch, like through Facebook as well as, you know, in our few meetups. And if any way I can help, I want to. And if anybody is honestly not signed up yet, I implore you to do it because it's worth it. I've seen the product. I know that it's worth it. It is a reference guide. It's a reference guide for comics. So it's not going to be like the pretty toy pictures, but it's going to be so crammed with information that even if you are a comics expert, you're going to learn something.
There is nothing else out there like this. I mean, like,
at all.
No Marvel, no DC books are like this. There's some kind of guides that have happened, you know, and of course there's like Overstreet, you know, that has the list, sure. But it's not, it's everything, and it's like not necessarily what it is. So that's why when Roger brought the idea to me, I was like, heck yeah, let's do this. And so maybe it'll go beyond that. Who knows? But ultimately, to the other two volumes, so 1, 2, 3, we already talked about. So volumes 4 and 5 are the international G.I. Joe non-English books.
Excellent.
So this is not where, well, I don't even know when we're going to kickstart this one, but I've gathered together as many international people who want to help us out with the books as we can because I don't speak Spanish.
I don't speak Spanish, Japanese,
any, you know, like Italian. There's a lot of languages. And there's already a lot of people out there that we've kind of found in certain countries that already signed on to help us. But we're thinking of those four books as like a 2 to 3 year project because we're talking 25 countries, 12 to 15 languages all over the place. We have scans. Some of them suck. Some of them are good. We need better scans because it's just the nature of the international comics. Like they didn't put them in bags and boards like we do.
Right.
You can't find near mint hardly anything, maybe.
Other countries don't treat comic collecting like America or Japan does.
Right.
Yeah, it's a culture here. There, it's kids' stuff. So it's thrown under the bed. It's drawn on. It's hard to find a mint copy of other countries' books.
That, and it's so hard to just come across them.
Yes. The cultural basis isn't there. There, it's just something to read and throw away.
Yeah.
In the past, I think there's more people now in Europe and in South America who have caught the American collecting bug, or maybe they had it already and just are being found by Americans. And so that's who we're going to try to tap into. So anybody listening, if you have anything international, a G.I. Joe,
especially,
you know, find us on
condition.
Facebook. It's After Action Report on Facebook. And then just be like, hey, here's this one. Do you have this one? And we'll be like, yes, no. What do you know about it? You know, and like, finding information about publishers, finding, you know, verifying how many issues are there. You know, G.I. Joe actually has appeared in a fair amount of Transformers in international countries, you know, so it's like appearances here and there. And it's not the crossover, it's just like G.I. Joe is in a Transformer comic. We're going to try to find all that. We're going to spend at least the next year and a half, just gathering as much information. And at the same time, we can kind of build the book. But once we get done with Volume 3, we'll probably start, or maybe before that, we'll start actually building those books. And we say Volumes 4 and 5 because Volume 4 should be Europe. Volume 5 is North America, South America, and Asia. And you're asking, like, why North America? Well, there's Canadian, and that's French. And, you know, we are going to have, in Volume 4, we are going to have a section on the UK. We'll kind of review a little bit of Action Force and Battle Action Force, but that's handled elsewhere, but it needs to be mentioned in there. So Volume 4 will be that. Volume 5 will be the North America, South America, and Asia. The idea is to work on them simultaneously, release them simultaneously, and kickstart them simultaneously, because in case it ends up being one book, so maybe Volume 4 will just be Volume 4, because like at this point now we have no idea how many pages it will be. Maybe it will be more than 144, or maybe it will be less. It's hard to know, because some of the runs are only like 12 books, which is like, you know, a page and a half. So that's where we're at with those volumes. And to me, that's like the most exciting stuff, because, you know, again, this is nothing anybody has ever seen, right? I mean, like, there's a few here and there, and some, they've done it a little bit for toys on the international side, but, like, G.I. Joe is a pretty unique property in that they were selling toys all over the world in the 80s, and they were using the same comic books that we read, but it was in other languages, so it's pretty exciting.
The international market offers the most potential for a discovery. Yeah, you know, who knows what's out.
And there's still new stuff that's being found. I mean, in toy world as well as comic world, but especially the comic world, because nobody was really hunting for a long time. International toy hunters have been hunting for a long time.
Yeah, and we just found an Indonesian book just a few weeks ago that neither of us had ever seen.
Oh, wow.
It has an 100% original story, like, just, and it's not even very well drawn. It has Quinn and Snake Eyes, and they're in a vamp with a missile rack on the top. You guys hear that? A missile rack on top of Vamp. And then Quinn dies, and then Snake Eyes dies.
Wow. Now we need to find somebody to translate that.
Yeah, so exactly.
Just looking at the story, it looks like they replaced G.I. Joe with the Indonesian military.
Okay.
And Snake Eyes and Quinn are like mercenaries. And it looks like kind of a three-way battle between them and Cobra. It's very confusing, but weird that Snake Eyes and Quinn get killed in the story.
That's crazy.
And Cobra Commander and Destro have, like, basically a two-panel appearance, and Destro has, like, a very S&M-looking outfit. Like, different than his pimp daddy and different than his normal open-chested thing. He's got, like, a head thing with, like, a big necklace thing. I don't know. It's weird. That's the kind of stuff we're putting in there.
Since we were just at Joe Fest, the D-Class booth is legendary for having crazy toys and two-ups and head sculpts and paint masters and all kinds of things. This year, you guys fill the booth with these international things.
Right.
I saw some crazy-looking Chinese covers. You had the Indonesian comic in there, but it's not meant to be flipped through at the D-Class booth because there's X number of people here and we don't want them all touching it. So I'm going to have to take your word for it and bug you for pictures at some point.
It's up in the room. I'll show you after we're done.
Carefully, he's just trying to lure you to his room.
Or I'm trying to be lured. That just speaks to how far this can go. Again, thank you. you guys don't have to be here. I guess I don't have to love it, but you guys are, and I do. And I thoroughly appreciate you guys.
To entice everybody who's listening, G.I. Joe obviously is a huge passion for all of us, right? And like, I'm comics. I'm not much toys. Right now, in 2021, in Europe, they are printing IDW comics. They're making cool new, like, it's called originalcomics.fr. It's France. You can go buy it. And it's basically a black and white copy on a hardback of issue 60 and number 21. And it's just amazing to look at. You're like, they don't do this kind of stuff in America with anything. Wow. And so that's this year. And I've found stuff in Italy, in France, in Spain, that are new. So they're still printing G.I. Joe in other languages.
See? I told you I'd get you guys to volume 11.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's why where the excitement of this series is, and you know, we're joining many of our other fellow G.I. Joe authors who have like, you know, 6-7, you know, that's how many they printed. We're hoping to get there, you know, maybe we'll get to 11. But, you know, I mean, so that's at least probably 2024, 2025, somewhere in there. We'll wrap up these next 5 volumes. And then who knows where we'll go from there. We don't want to go beyond that.
It'll very much depend on demand, if people still want it, if there's still information out there to publish.
I don't think you'll find a lack of interest in this community.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, how many people would want to buy a volume of the IDW continuity? That's the stuff that started in 2008, right, with the 3 different series and ran all the way until 2016 and was killed in the Revolution series when Unicron showed up, right, in Transformers Unicron story.
We all
right,
want
I mean,
it.
So, but that's a whole continuity that, like, we're not even talking about doing. Yeah,
at some point, you guys are going to get to Paula Lore's 10-issue triumphant, you know, little thing.
Right,
so,
where does Dead Game fit in there? You know, Game's not even got to issue 5. But, you know, somebody, you know, maybe 10 years, 15 years from now, maybe they want that book. I don't know. But, like, you know, we can't really go that far. And as Roger said, you know, is there interest for that book? Clearly, Devils Due and Marvel, a huge interest, you know what I mean? And I think with Hammer's continuation, you know, going to soon to be issue 300, there's definitely a very serious interest in that because it's all the same story.
At some point, your volumes are just going to be all the new stuff.
And there's clearly interest. There's just a matter of how much interest, how many people.
I personally believe there's a ton of interest. I hope there is. I will help beat the drum as much as you guys want. Need. I'm always available in anything you guys need. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.